Cancer sucks. That is what survivors and those diagnosed with this term for a class of disease characterized by abnormal cells that grow and invade healthy cells in the body tell us. According to the American Cancer Society, breast cancer starts in the cells of the breasts and can then invade surrounding tissues or spread to other areas of the body. Our guests today share their firsthand information on how this disease changed their life, and later we learn of a program here in our region to help those diagnosed with a not-so-popular cancerous disease. Welcome to And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy.
I'm Maya Schwader. As much as cancer, like they say, sucks for those living with it, there are myriad groups out there to help with everything from new therapies to just helping folks muddle along. The Rays of Hope Walk is one such effort. Founded over two decades ago, the walk has raised millions of dollars for research and treatment. Michelle Gracie is a 22-year survivor of breast cancer and works as the manager of the walk, which is part of the Bay State Health Foundation. We spoke with her to discuss what the outreach is like for those in need of support when dealing with, as they call it, the Big C.
So Rays of Hope started in 1994. Lucy Giugio Carvalho was an RN at Bay State at the time, and she was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 38. She wanted to find a way to make it kind of like a whole comprehensive one-stop experience for anyone, because it was very hard to navigate that whole system. So she brought about the idea of starting Rays of Hope. And at the same time, the hospital was considering actually creating a comprehensive breast center. So it was a good tie-in. Lucy had been diagnosed previous to that, but there was, as Lucy likes to say, the whole thing was kind of planned around her kitchen table with her extended Italian family. And most of the people attending were pretty much her family and friends, but there was about 500 participants and they raised around $50,000 that first year.
$50,000 then, a whole lot of money. Now, what are the tabulations on a yearly basis?
So we're in our 28th year right now. We have raised a total since 1994 of $15.7 million. All of that money remains local to support actual local breast cancer research at the Rays of Hope Center for Breast Cancer Research. Programs and services, and even we offer grants to some community programs like Cancer House of Hope and Cancer Connection. We usually walk rain, shine, snow, wind. We've pretty much had it all. There's no rain date ever for the Rays of Hope walk and run. So last year was something that we really had to try to figure out pretty quickly.
Fundraising has been an issue throughout the course of the pandemic. Have you seen more donations coming since people are able to sit on the couch and just press a button to donate? Or are you guys still struggling to meet some goals?
So our participants and our donors are phenomenal. And last year, even with the pandemic, helped us raise $300,000. Unfortunately, that's half of what we normally raise. So that meant less funding for breast cancer research and programs. You know, a lot of the programs that we do support through grants actually had to shutter. So that did help in a way. So we didn't have to, you know, provide them with grant money, but it's still something that we, you know, feel very strongly about, that we want to be able to continue to provide those programs and services. So that's why this year we've asked everyone to embrace the power of pink, go out and fundraise, walk and run whenever and wherever you choose, and then come and join us on the Parade of Hope on October 24th, which is cars only. It's a drive-through event. Nobody's going to be walking around like we normally do in a normal year.
We were talking about how last year was the first year that you weren't able to hold the fundraising event. What was that like to have to cancel it?
It's such an important thing for so many people to come and see that excitement and get that big hug that is Rays of Hope. So what we were able to do was actually ask them to send us their photos, send us a headshot. And we created collages of all the survivors that we showed on the giant jumbotron that we had at the drive-through event. And then also shared those photos on our virtual celebration, which followed it. online.
Michelle, you yourself are a 22-year survivor, so you can mimic these emotions. What was your journey?
I was actually 37 years old. I wasn't old enough to go for a mammogram where my insurance would pay for it. I actually found mine not even through a self-breast exam, which I really highly recommend people do, but I was actually just putting lotion on, you know, which women always do. We're putting lotion on. And I felt something that just felt very weird. So I had gone to my doctor, my primary, who was a little concerned and set me up with an appointment to have an ultrasound. So when I had the ultrasound, they pretty much kind of confirmed that I needed to have a biopsy. So we did the biopsy, and then I was told that I had breast cancer. Very shocking. You know, you keep thinking in the back of your mind, it's okay, it's okay, it's nothing. So when you do hear that, the word cancer, it's quite shocking. But as Jackie said, I have a wonderful family. You know, everyone surrounding me at the time, it really was like a big hug. A friend of mine was a hairdresser at the time and came over, and we had this big party, and I didn't want to see, you know, my hair falling out. So we just shaved my head one day and had like a little party about it. So you try to find the little things that you can find humor.
Each year in the United States, about 255,000 women get breast cancer and 42,000 women die from the disease. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control. Other than skin cancer, breast cancer is the most common cancer among American women. Women like Jackie Rodriguez from Springfield, who, with her husband, Alberto, faced a harsh reality 12 years ago this month.
I went in to have my first routine mammogram at the age of 40, and it was my last mammogram. I was diagnosed with breast cancer on one of my breasts, and to be told that C word, it kind of just, you know, makes you clear-minded, like a camera in front of your face. But having the support, you know, coming home to a husband and trying to break down the news in a funny way, you know, I have good news and I have bad news, and to be able to say, wow, you know, who can I reach out to and feel that I'm not alone? You know, I have family, I have friends, but I needed to kind of reach out to women representing rays of hope, you know, that they also went through something like that. And it makes it all better to go through that first year of what if, you know, what's going to be the outcome of such a diagnosis, and in what stage, you know, are we faced with. So it is shocking. I think I was in a huge denial stage for many months. I wanted what was said to me to be cleared and over and done with, and my focus was on that. And I think it allowed me to just get through it. And then the actual shock comes in when you realize that there's been a part of your body that just no longer exists. And that's when you kind of, you know, take it in and you're like, oh boy, you know, like, what am I going to do after this? How can I overcome such a big loss? But we overcome it.
When did you find out that you were a survivor? You weren't a patient anymore.
So, you know, it's funny, but it's a huge coincidence, because breast cancer awareness is in October. And I was diagnosed in October. So for me, it's such a huge celebration. I call it my second birthday, and I'm going on 12 years old all over again. I truly believe that this month is such a huge, big month for me, because it allowed me to say that I was reliving, because when you're told that you have breast cancer, you are a survivor as of that day. And to know that it was in October, I think I was so blessed to know that every October I was going to be in this lifetime image of just being a survivor, and I did it.
Al, you are a family member who had to support someone going through this. Tell us what it was like when you heard that your wife had the big C.
You know, when I heard the news, of course, I had to be strong, but I couldn't believe it. I was also in denial, and I had to show strength. So, you know, at the time, our boys were pretty young. And so how do we sit down and tell them what's happening? I just started just getting paranoid and scared because I didn't know. I've heard of breast cancer, but I was not educated about breast cancer. And that to something hits home in your home and it affects or, you know, a family member, especially a loved one, my wife, I was like devastated. So I went out and I says, I want to step outside for a minute. And I went out to the backyard and I kind of looked up in the sky and I said, you know, to God, I said, you know why, you know, if anybody, it should be me, not my wife. Because we have boys, we have three little boys and, you know, I just want the best for them. You know, they need their mother. So it was tough, but the rays of hope was there. I started educating myself because it's really when someone gives you something for the first time, the average person takes in 10% of the information. And when I sat down at the hospital and they gave me this big three, they gave us this big three ring binder because I was trying to educate myself. What's happening? What is this all about? And I'm all nervous, but I couldn't understand anything, you know, and I reached out to Rays of Hope and reading the stories of the survivors. It was so inspirational. I tried to be not getting emotional when I had to explain to my boys what if or what could happen. But I thank God every day. Every day is a celebration, not just once a year. Every day is a celebration for us. Anytime we could get up, you know, strength is in numbers. And the Rays of Hope is not an organization for us. They're a family. We created La Luchadoras right after she was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. I'm determined. In our first turnout, we had over 7,500 people just in our team. And we've been, you know, blessed to have such friends and families and supporters to come out every day and support us, not only every day, but on a yearly basis. They're there as a team, part of our team.
Coming up, we'll speak with a doctor who's at the cutting edge of treating a new type of stage zero breast cancer. Stay with us on And Another Thing.
You're listening to And Another Thing. With Maya Schwader, I'm Derek Kennedy. We're talking with survivors of breast cancer today and learning how important one's support system, whether family or inherited community, can help cope with a life-altering diagnosis.
Michelle, Jackie and Al have been talking very eloquently about the need for community, having that support system around you when this happens. There are people out there who are getting these diagnoses, however, who for one reason or another don't have that network. Is this what Rays of Hope does to help build that community around a person at a time like this?
Yeah, I think especially the day that we have the Rays of Hope Walk and Run, there's such an energy there. And as Jackie said, you're surrounded by so many other survivors who are just like you and, you know, look like you or like your neighbor or are your neighbors. So I think that's a very important.
It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so there's lots of information now, right? But what happens the rest of the year, Michelle? How important is information around breast cancer and not just for women, cancer for men as well?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Dara. Men do get breast cancer. You know, we actually have one of the survivors who is a man and was very willing to talk about it. Most men are very private about it. I'm not a medical expert, but I do know that it's highly important to be very educated about our breasts and what can happen to them. It's knowing your breasts. And so when you do see a change, it may not mean that it's breast cancer, but, you know, it's something to talk to your doctor about.
What kind of resources do people have or have access to that may not have traditional family or insurance? What happens then?
So Rays of Hope, we are able to provide grants to some organizations in the community. Some of them, they can get free wigs. Wigs are not covered by a lot of insurance, prosthetic support for mastectomy bras, that type of thing.
And also the YMCA Wellness Center that you can join for free as a survivor at the YMCA. I thought that was amazing, you know, especially after you have a reconstruction and you do therapy and you want to start feeling good about yourself.
You not only have the cancer survivor community around you, you also have the Hispanic community around you, and you are the first Hispanic chairs of Rays of Hope. What is it like to be able to bring those two communities together?
I think, no offense to Michelle, I think it was well overdue. truly, because I think that this is how the community responds to things that are affected, you know, directly to certain cultures. And I think that, you know, we have those timid, you know, survivors, a lot of people that just can't express themselves. And to see that, you know, this hits home, it has no discrimination. And now there's this Hispanic girl saying the same thing, the same language that they can talk to. I think it really will increase numbers in reference to more of our community responding to this amazing Rays of Hope right here in the backyard. I can't stop emphasizing that because I want everyone to know that it's right here in Springfield, especially for all of, you know, the women and men that are affected by this, and to know that they can reach out.
We were honored. I was honored, in fact, because when we were chosen as the first Hispanic couple to chair, it just gave us a louder voice to reach out to the community, not only to the Hispanic community, but to everyone. And we enjoy it. I mean, if we could, you know, touch anyone, you need the understanding and the teamwork and the help.
We want to be candid. This happens to anyone. And I started off shy at my first year walk. I didn't talk to anyone. I think we grow into it. And again, you know, we make it meaningful in our lives and we start to open up our doors and hearts, allowing us to heal from inside out to make it happen. It's okay to be shy.
What does the person do that doesn't know what to do next? Maybe they're scared to go and get tested. What happens to the person that's listening to this and says, I'm interested, now what do I do?
You know, if it's someone who is noticing there's a change in their breasts or is feeling something, what you need to do is hold on to the hope and not hold on to the fear and move forward and call your doctor and make that appointment to be seen. It's so much better to, you know, have the answer. And if you do have cancer, you know that there is a group of people who are going to be working to make sure that your treatment is tailored to you specifically. But know that you might be experiencing something does not necessarily mean that it's cancer. So, you know, go get the mammogram, go talk to your doctor. Be seen and be heard.
Michelle Gracie, Jackie, and Al Rodriguez, thank you so much for spending time to talk to us about Rays of Hope.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jared.
Thank you for having us.
About 1 in 5 new breast cancer cases diagnosed in the United States this year will be a specific type in which cancer cells grow but are confined within the milk duct of the breast. According to the American Cancer Society, there were more than 2,200 of those DCIS cases in New England alone last year.
The Dana-Farber-Brigham Cancer Center recently launched a new program designed to address the unique needs of women diagnosed with the earliest form of breast cancer. It is the only program in the Northeast dedicated to treating what is called DCIS. We spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Mittendorf, who, among her many titles, is a professor of surgery at Harvard Medical School and the co-director of the DCIS program at Brigham and Women's Cancer Center. We asked her, what exactly is DCIS?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. It's one that I go over with my patients every week in clinic. So they're told they have a diagnosis of DCIS, which stands for ductal carcinoma in situ. And what I'll advise my patients is that they may hear this called any number of things. It all means the same thing. So it's pre-cancer, non-invasive cancer, DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, early stage cancer. Technically, it is stage 0 breast cancer. But the important point is that it is not invasive cancer. It's a speed bump on their road of life, but not a threat to their mortality.
There were over 2,000 of these cases in the New England area last year. How do people know if they have that? And is that 2,000 number a high number for a cancer or stage 0 cancer that we haven't heard much about?
I think that is such a great question. And so 2,000 does sound like a large number, but maybe we should be glad about that, because what it means is that women in New England are getting mammograms. And so DCIS rarely shows up as a lump or a bump that their patient or their partner may feel. It's most commonly diagnosed in women who are getting a screening mammogram. And we know from data from the American Cancer Society that the uptake or the adherence with recommendations to get mammograms is quite high in New England. And so we would expect to see a fair number of DCIS cases. And as you pointed out, it's over 2,200. But the encouraging part is, again, this is quite treatable at this very early stage. And so, again, it reflects that women in New England are getting their mammograms.
Is it possible for men to get DCIS as well?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And so the answer is it is possible, but it's quite unlikely. Men just don't get mammograms, right? And so there wouldn't be that opportunity for the detection at the time of screening.
This is so far the only program in the Northeast dedicated to DCIS. Is that because this is simply a new phenomenon?
No, we've known about DCIS for years, and I think most of the breast centers across the region treat patients with DCIS. What's distinctly different about our program at the Dana-Farber-Brigham Women's Cancer Center is that we're acknowledging that DCIS is in fact a different diagnosis and that these patients have different considerations. We are the only site that has active clinical trials that are enrolling patients with DCIS, perhaps to inform their care, but also to help us learn about the disease process so that we can, in the future, inform care for a larger population of patients.
Medical technology is advancing a lot, fortunately. Are you anticipating that we're going to see more of these sort of similar phenomenon pop up that are kind of like precancerous, were previously undetectable or not really known, and then help, we hope, future preventative measures?
Yeah, I think your question is interesting on so many levels, because it is possible that our technology could outpace our ability to do anything with the information that we gain. Probably a decade or so ago now, maybe even 15 years, there was this idea that you could do nipple aspirate fluid. So you would put a small little cannula in a woman's nipple and pull out some cells and look at them under the microscope. And let's say they were abnormal. Well, the problem there is, if their mammogram's normal and their MRI is normal, but they have these abnormal cells, I don't know that they're going to develop breast cancer. Maybe they will. But at this point, the only treatment I could offer them is either a pill they have to take every 5 years with side effects, or I'd have to do a mastectomy. So that was supposed to become the pap smear of breast cancer, and it never really panned out.
Cancer is just a scary word, and the thought of paying for it is even scarier for a lot of individuals. Is it covered under insurance, this new program for DCIS, or are there programs that can help people that might need financial assistance?
Yeah, so the program, patients enter into the program with a diagnosis of DCIS for which their treatment will be covered by their insurance. Those are resources that we as the Dana-Farber-Brigham Women's Cancer Center have brought to bear for these patients. And so it would be at no charge to them. It would be part of the care that we're offering them for their DCIS diagnosis.
Dr. Elizabeth Mittendorf, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for this edition of And Another Thing. I'm Maya Schwader.
And I'm Derek Kennedy. We hope you'll join us again.